Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast. Welcome to today's episode of InnovaBuzz, where we're climbing to new heights in the expansive terrain of podcasting and self-publishing with our guide, who is Anthony Wanieri. As a best-selling author and a trailblazer in the podcasting industry, Anthony's insights act as your climbing gear, equipping you to tackle the steep slopes of audience growth and podcast monetization, something that podcasters are always chasing. In this episode, he will lay out a pathway that not only helps you scale these heights, but ensures you reach the summit successfully. Join us as Anthony provides actionable strategies that promise to enhance your professional journey and enrich your life, helping you stand out in the crowded digital landscape. Get ready to ascend to new peaks with your podcast. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from King's Lynn in England, Anthony Wanieri, who's the best-selling author of the book Podcasting Made Simple. And I know there's a few other books there, but that's the highlighted one. He's also co-host of Why Your Podcast Isn't Growing and co-founder of Get More Listeners. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Anthony. It's a great privilege to have you here as my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here, and I'm looking forward to getting into things.
Now, diving into your work, it's clear you've crafted quite a unique path in podcasting and publishing work, and your journey is an interesting one, from the challenges of starting out to achieving significant milestones like best-selling books and successful podcast. And it speaks volumes, not just about your entrepreneurial spirit, but also about deeper motivation driving your efforts. So my first question really is about that deeper motivation. What impact do you aim to make in the world today?
For myself, I hope to live a meaningful life, a life where I feel truly proud of what I've accomplished, a life where I've provided value to others and made other people's lives tons better. I want to wake up every day doing good work, engaging with my clients in the podcasting space and the industry that I've chose to be in, which is helping podcasters grow and monetize their podcast, solving the real problem for the market and getting paid abundantly well for that. To me, you know, that's really impact. So making real significant change to people's lives, helping people gain clarity where they feel confused. There's nothing more satisfying than that. And then on a deeper level, for my end, it's not just impact for just my clients and my team members, but to be honest with you, selfishly speaking, you know, I was born in Nigeria, moved over to the UK when I was around 6 or 7, and my mother super hard working, worked in the NHS, and from my end, I feel very blessed to have the opportunity to be, you know, in a first world country that's extremely developed with all the opportunities in the world. So it feels like a total waste if I personally didn't try to make as much impact as I possibly can, not just for myself, but to pass that blessing that was given on to me to my family, who are still back home in Nigeria, who aren't maybe in as fortunate position as myself. So really making sure I take the most out of this opportunity and also transfer that to my clients. And from that value, also transfer that to my family back at home in Nigeria. So that's really what's driving me, to be completely honest.
Yeah. Well, that's a really powerful motivator. And I knew I liked you when we first spoke, but the idea of just getting that motivation from making a difference to other people's lives and having that impact and the fulfillment. I like how you balance that definition of success between the fulfillment, the making a difference to other people's lives, even to the extent of giving back to your family and communities in Nigeria where you were originally born. And then the business side of it, of course, making lots of money, being rewarded adequately for your contribution to the businesses.
That's important, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So I think the balance is a good one though, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. So it's fascinating because, I mean, obviously you're quite a driven person and yet you dropped out of college and now have gone on to become a successful entrepreneur. What kind of led you to drop out of college? I'm guessing it wasn't because you weren't capable of getting through the course you were enrolled in. I'm guessing you sort of decided that wasn't going to give you the satisfaction you were looking for.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Well, I mean, you know, I guess for context, I think it would have been nearly 3 years ago now I dropped out of college to go all in on business, you know, despite having literally basically at that point zero experience in actual business or podcasting. I had experience generating income online, but there's a difference between having a side hustle and running a full-time business. And to be honest with you, the reason why I dropped out was I was working too hard at university, right? And, you know, all jokes aside, the honest truth is, like, you know, got to the point at university where I was trying to balance having a publishing company and building that and getting that off the ground and also trying to get a degree in sports science. Now, for myself, sports science has never been a passion. I went to university with intention of setting up the foundation for a successful business. That was all I ever wanted to do. I remember one night before I went to university, I had my best friend, Kian. I sat him down next to me and I said, dude, I would be blown away if I make it all the way to the end of university, because I knew what my intentions were. So it got to a point as I was going through university, where I started feeling a bit more lost. I started feeling kind of like unclear about where I'm meant to go in the future. I knew I wanted to do great things, but I didn't really know the steps I needed to take. You know that feeling where, like, you know there's a lot of potential in you and you know that you're meant to do something great, but you have no clue how you're going to get there, how to start, where to go. I was clueless. I was basically just lost. And when COVID happened, I was at this point, started contemplating whether I should carry on with university or whether I should drop out. And I didn't really know what to do. And around that time, I was introduced to self-publishing, which is, again, a way to publish books on Amazon and generate an income by providing value in a book form to a market. So for us, we picked the market of podcasting, the industry of podcasting. So when this opportunity came about, it was kind of a spanner in the works, right? And it almost amplified my need and my, I guess, the voice in the back of my head saying, should you really be at university or is there something else you should be doing? Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until it got to a point where I went back to university for my final year. So I was doing 3 years of university. And my final year after I started and discovered this publishing thing, I thought, let me try to balance things out. But no matter how hard I tried, things always never seemed to move as fast with the business, but things were progressing really well with my degree. I was working very hard. I was staying disciplined because I needed to be disciplined if I'm trying to balance the business and the degree. I'll wake up at 6, I'll walk to the library for 7, I'll be there till like 4 or 5, finish my work for university, and then I'll go down because the library had a 2 stories. I'll go down to the bottom story where there was a Costa and I'll go in there and work till around, like, you know, 8 or 9. And then I'll walk back home, do some more work, go to bed, and then repeat that cycle again. That was my life, you know, for several months. So when I said I was working too hard, I just got to a point where I was like, this doesn't actually make any sense. I'm spending all this time on a degree I know I'm not going to use, I don't really like, and to me, it didn't mean much to me, to be completely honest. And I know some people that feels a bit strange. So I was then stuck a second time where I felt really lost. You know, I had the first initial time when lockdown happened, I felt like lost, directionless. And then I went back, found my direction with this publishing company. Then I went back to university. Then several months down the line, trying to balance these two moving parts, I then felt lost again because I was like, well, why am I doing all this hard work at this degree that I'm not going to use? And I wanted to speak to a mentor or speak to someone who's been in my position. And I remember this even literally praying to God and saying, look, dude, I need direction. Like, I want to speak to these two guys who are the owners. They're called the Mickelson Twins. They're the owners of Publishing.com, the company, the education company that I went through to help me publish my first book. And me and my business partner, Ty, went through to publish my first book. So I asked, like, I would love to speak to these two and get their insight on what they would do if they were in my situation. You know, we all have mentors. We all have people we look up to, but it's how we didn't have that communication, that direct line, because they're sometimes far away, they're busy, right? So I asked God, like, I'd love to know what they would do in my situation. That same night, I found myself 2 hours in my, you know, underneath my covers with my phone out, stalking one of the founders of the company. And I struck gold, you know. After a couple of moments, I struck gold. And it was a YouTube video that they had recorded when they dropped out of university. And it said how we went from complete losers or failures to successful multimillionaires, something like that.
Yeah.
30 minutes in, they're basically word for word describing my exact situation. They spoke about how they were at university, working hard, doing well, but didn't make sense. They were 90% of the way through, but still didn't make sense because they had a business that they loved and they were passionate about. Their family and friends were telling them to keep at it and not to drop out because it seems stupid. Why would you give up so close to the end? Why not just get the degree and you have that? But it didn't make sense to them and they dropped out. And then seeing where they are now, you know, two extremely successful individuals who absolutely, you know, did amazing things with their life moving forward after they dropped out. In that instant, after praying and then seeing that video of them literally mentoring me, I was like, right, in that moment, that's me. I'm done university and I'm going all in this publishing business. So that's really how all of this kind of started, with those kind of pivotal moments from me feeling lost at university to where I am now.
So it kind of gave you the confidence that you could do this and be successful. But what I'm curious about, 100%. Given what we were talking about pre-recording, you were describing the path to the podcast and that you started with publishing books and you chose podcasting as what you were going to write about. I'm sort of curious, why did you choose podcasting to write about when you didn't have a podcast and you didn't sort of have any credentials to stand on, so to speak, when you wrote the book?
That's a great question. And you know what's funny, right? I wish I could sit here and say, you know, we thought it out. It was completely mapped out. It was strategic. We just knew it was going to work. But the honest truth was, it was a combination of just dumb luck and also a combination of me and my business partner. We were interested into it. We kind of looked at some numbers, like what's the demand, what's the supply, what's the competition like for other publishing companies publishing books on podcasting. And the numbers looked good. So we took a leap of faith and said, look, let's just go for it. And it really was a leap of faith because we were literally two dumb college students who were clueless about the podcasting world and just had to just learn by failing and failing a lot along the way. It was partly like, you know, dumb luck, a bit of strategy, and mostly leap of faith.
Fascinating. All right. Well, let's switch gears and talk about podcasting. And I know today, well, it's grow your audience is the business. So helping podcasters grow their audience and to get to the stage of publishing books. So tell us a little bit about some of the strategies that at a high level that podcasters can use to grow their audience.
I love that. So I'm going to tell you the boring answer and I'm going to tell you the nice, sexy answer, right?
Right.
So if a client comes to me, if you're a podcaster and you came to me saying, hey, look, Ant, you know, I've been podcasting for 2 to 3 years. I've got this business in the back end of mine. I love the podcast, but I can't help but feel like it's, you know, it's kind of like an expensive hobby that I kind of enjoy, but I can't keep doing without a real ROI. I'm not seeing the growth I want. It's growing a little bit, but it's getting pretty stagnant. It's pretty slow. And my audience aren't engaging me on a day-to-day basis. What do I do, right? What's the next, you know, social media strategy? Should I do promotional clips? How can I get celebrities on my podcast so I can attract some of their audience to my show? What do I have to do, Ant? Most people believe that what they need to grow a podcast is more exposure. And it makes sense. more exposure podcast grows, right? It makes total sense. Get a million views on your podcast, podcast should grow, right? But what happens when you get exposure on a podcast that is unable to turn that exposure, those eyeballs, into active listeners, and is unable to get those listeners coming back for future episodes? It's like a leaky bucket, right? You can keep trying to fill up the bucket as much as you want with your exposure, but if you've got the leaks in the bucket, you're not going to retain all that hard work you've done in the promotion end. So what do we need to do to fix the growth? Well, if you plug the holes in the bucket, now it's no longer leaking. Now, when you pour exposure, you're able to retain those new listeners who discover your show. Now, that's very abstract and a nice analogy, but what that looked like practically speaking. Most podcasts don't have a clear USP. So their show isn't distinctly different from other podcasts in their space. If you have a business podcast about sales, most people are just interviewing other people in sales talking about sales. But everyone's doing that. So how are you going to stand out from the market? Why should people pay attention to your show versus everyone else when you look like everyone else? So it's hard to gain traction. It's hard to stand out. And even when you're promoting on social media, people are constantly seeing promotions. So if you don't have a USP, something uniquely different about your show, when you promote on social media, it's actually tons harder to gain that traction. So let's say you have two podcasts. One's an interview show about sales, and the other one is the exact same podcast about sales. However, it's packaged in a different way. This show gets their listeners, their audience members, to hand in sales objection via voice note, and you as the host show them how you would handle that objection live on each episode. And you package those as a podcast. Is a creative way to view what a podcast is. You're creating an experience your listeners will absolutely love and enjoy. You're creating a show that stands out, gains traction, and is highly shareable. You're creating a show that can attract more listeners. That's the starting point of where I would start off. What's your current positioning? That's the macro. And there's different things you can do. Now, that's the the boring stuff that people don't like hearing, but it's just where we have to go. But in terms of the more fun stuff, I think the most practical ways to grow your podcast would then be podcast SEO. So understanding which keywords on Apple and Spotify you want to rank for. So Apple and Spotify, these are the two biggest platforms that most new listeners go to discover new shows to listen to. There are 11 million weekly listeners in America alone. Right? The majority of them go to Apple and Spotify. So when you can rank your show higher using podcast SEO on Apple and Spotify, you're now being discovered by new listeners on a consistent basis. You're now growing organically without having to do all this grunt work of chasing celebrities, of trying to get high profile guests on, of constantly promoting, which we both know doesn't really work. And then a final piece would just be guesting on tons of podcasts who have a similar show to yours. But here's the key part. Again, what happens when you rank high on Apple and Spotify, you promote on social media, and you guest on other people's podcasts and audiences to get yourself that exposure to their audience, and your podcast doesn't have a clear positioning. There's nothing new or exciting about it. Why would they check out your show? You're just like everyone else out there. But if you pitch it and it's exciting and wildly attractive to the listeners you're now in front of as a guest on a bigger podcast, you're far more likely to attract their audience to your own. They're gonna have a higher intent to find out the podcast. So again, you have to start with the USP, your unique positioning, and then everything else builds. If not, things will crumble as you add more exposure.
Yeah, well, there's lots of great advice there. And a lot of it comes back to good old marketing 101 in some ways.
Yeah.
So knowing who the audience is and then matching to that audience something that has you stand out, something that attracts them to you and gives them unique value. That's how I see it with the podcasting space as well. I was reminded there was something, and I kept coming back to this, and I was reminded of it again when you were saying the example of the sales podcast where they deal with sales objections more or less live online. about there was somebody, and I don't recall who this was, but I listened to a few episodes and I thought that's really neat, where they brought somebody on as a guest, but they basically coached them. So they brought clients on that, and it was kind of like the first free consult. So they were coaching in a particular area, and they'd say, well, I'll give you an hour's coaching for free. What you have to do, though, to get that hour's coaching for free is allow me to record it and agree for me to publish it on my podcast. And, of course, those podcasts, people would bring problems that weren't just problems that one person was having. They would be business problems that lots of people would have, and they were they really showcased the host in a way that, hey, this guy's pretty good at what he does, and they offered a solution to the guest, and then of course highlighted that solution to anybody else, like you said earlier, when you read about the two publishing guys and resonated straight away, saying they've gone through exactly what I've gone through. And so this is the feeling that listeners can get on that sort of show.
Absolutely, 100%. It is the like you mentioned, it's like marketing 101, and we often, and honestly, I've had to fail along the way to kind of figure this stuff out. It didn't just happen just like, you know, out of nowhere. It was just by working with clients and then seeing, okay, well, some clients do really well and other clients with the exact same exposure, if not more, still suffer with slow growth. And that really agitated me, you know, because you have so many great podcasts out there. So I was just a bit confused, scratching my head. So here I am thinking I'm some expert to help people grow their podcast, but the results seem to be inconsistent. And you're able to pick out these different variables. Okay, this podcast is doing all of these assets. They're promoting on social media. They're getting great guests on. They're great, doing great interviews, but they're not retaining listeners and they're not growing month after month. Whereas this podcast seems to be just growing, like just flying by. What's the difference? Oh, well, this podcast is just like every other podcast. And this podcast is a history show where this guy is calling dead people through time, and he has voice actors on the other side of the phone, like Abraham Lincoln, who are like, hey, who's this? You know, what's the phone? And when you're able to make those distinctions and see kind of the trends of like what's working and what's not, then you're like, okay, let me try this again. Let me replicate it. There's a work with this client. There's a work with that client. And you see it working. And then you get, okay, this makes a lot of sense. And why is that? So yeah, again, marketing 101, but it's the things that we all often miss, to be honest.
All right, well, coming back to your experience in publishing books, and linking that to podcasting, talk to us a little bit about why podcasters might want to publish a book, and also maybe in a broader sense of the idea of how podcasters can monetize their podcast. Because this is one of my favorite topics, and a lot of people ask me, how do you monetize the podcast? You know, how do I? Well, they're more specific than that. They often ask, how do I get lots of advertisers? Because that's going to make me rich. How do I get lots of sponsors? Because that's going to make me rich in the podcasting. And I always love to deflate that balloon.
I'm sure that goes well. No, that's a good question. I guess from my end, so, you know, what's one of the biggest, two of the biggest problems within the podcasting space are, number one, most podcasters struggle to grow. Number two, the majority of podcasts don't know how to make money from their shows. Right? Those are pretty consistent. And I think I started seeing the trend when I started working with clients one-on-one, podcasters, helping them grow their shows. So at this point, I had published multiple books within the podcasting space and also outside of the podcasting space, because we have a publishing company, and one of our biggest niche, you know, our main niche is really podcasting. So after learning how to publish a book and the process and how to make money from a book is very different to just being an author. You know, you can be an author and be, most authors are dead broke. That's just a matter of the fact. Most people don't make money from their books. but we understood how to make money from our book. We understood how to validate whether a book topic is already proven to be making sales on Amazon. We had these softwares, these tools that we could literally have insights on whether a market is profitable or not. So we knew that. We also knew that publishing books is an incredible way to provide value to a market. If you do a good job of it, it's pretty much timeless. And then the most amazing part about this is, it's a product you have forever that's timeless, and better yet, Amazon takes care of all the fulfillment, the delivery, the customer service, everything for you. All you have to do is market the book and get it selling well on Amazon. So that taught me how to market the books. So when I then started helping podcasters grow, many business owners, experts, people with topic focused shows about, let's say, it could be anywhere from, you know, business to leadership, to personal development, to mental health and anxiety, to shadow work. It could be a variety of different topics. Because I'd had the experience of seeing the inside of literally 500 plus business owners, self-publishing companies, I knew what books and topics were selling well. I knew what markets, you know, what specific topics were doing very well and very profitable. When I would work with podcasters who were in the same niche, like let's say there's a book, let's say there's a niche on Amazon known as, let's say, like, you know, anxiety, right? Books on anxiety sell well on Amazon. Got it. There's this podcast here that has a big audience but doesn't have to monetize. You know, they might get a couple dollars from an advertiser who then drops them after a couple of months because they're not making the real ROI, right? Yeah. So I knew that a book was a great way for people who are already talking about this topic, anxiety, to capture that wisdom that's transpired over 100 plus episodes and distill that into a book, a product that they can sell to their audience if they want to. So having just these insights of what books sell well on Amazon, knowing that the biggest problem for most podcasts is growth and monetization, and understanding that Amazon, the model of publishing books on Amazon is incredible because they do most of the work for you, I started to like almost like see this like map. And then it hit me. If your book is selling well on Amazon and you're selling a couple hundred copies a week or a month, or thousands of copies a month, you can then introduce your podcast to the new readers of your book because that's a different audience. You've never heard of your podcast before. So you imagine this loop, this feedback loop, where you have a podcast and you're publishing tons of episodes. You're able to distill that knowledge of those episodes in a book form. You then sell that to your audience, let's say, or you can actually ask strategies. We give free copies to our audience. They review the book and then we rank high on Amazon. And because we rank high on Amazon, we make tons more sales just off organic traffic. So people search on Amazon, they find your book ranked on page one, and then they're like, wow, let's buy this book. Now you're just being discovered naturally by people on Amazon. People on Amazon buy your book, and now they discover your podcast. Now they become a listener of your show. And there's this feedback loop that just keeps going around where the more episodes you cover, the more books you can make from your podcast. The more books you can make from your podcast, the more entry points new listeners, the more entry points you have, the more entry points are created for new listeners to find and discover your show. And to top it all off, you're getting paid by Amazon hundreds, if not thousands or tens of thousands over years for acquiring new listeners for your business and your podcast. That was a long-winded way of explaining it. I kind of went on massive tangents, but let me know if there's anything to clarify for you.
Yeah, that's certainly a really innovative strategy, and I love the concept of you basically using content that you've already produced in the podcast to write a book, and you're using the existing listener base to help promote that book and help it rank on Amazon, which then gets it organically found. And the new people that discover the book and buy the book, they pay for the privilege of discovering your podcast, and then it's a cycle. Yeah.
That's it. And one of the hardest things to find in business is a flywheel that actually works. A positive feedback loop that actually works. And it feels great to have something like that with this system. And again, it solves a real problem because most podcasters, for some reason, I know why, they want to publish a book because it helps them with authority. It helps them stand out from the market. Mm-hmm. It helps them get way more out of their podcast because the knowledge and the wisdom that's shared on the show is already there. But the biggest, biggest problem that they have is, number one, they don't know how to generate income from it. Number two, they don't want to be bogged down with the writing process that can be draining a lot of the times. And then number three, the expenses that comes with the traditional way of writing a book, of publishing, of going for a publishing house. Whereas with us and what we're doing with our clients and podcasting, what we encourage podcasters or any content creators to do is to start experimenting with AI. You know, that's what we're doing and testing all the time, is experiment with how can you use AI to distill all the content you have, put that into a book form, and then market that in an attractive way. The same way you'd market a podcast, the same way you market a business, is really thinking about this as a product you're trying to sell to a market. And that's huge for so many of our clients.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about AI, obviously. You've kind of primed that for me now. So the idea of using AI for books now, I mean, there's a lot of people today writing blog posts, writing articles and so on, or having them written by AI, by ChatGPT or one of the other language models. And I noticed the other day it's gotten so far that a personal video that I recorded, which was simply a bunch of cockatoos playing with tennis balls, which I thought was cute because they were wild cockatoos that had invaded this tennis court and were playing with tennis balls. And I thought, I'll record this video just for personal thing. But then I thought, well, I'll put it on YouTube because where else do you put it to kind of share with family and friends? And as I went to publish this on YouTube, I had to make a couple of declarations to say that I hadn't used AI to modify this video in any way so that there were people on there doing things that they didn't actually do, and being depicted that they were doing things they didn't actually do. And there was no content in there that was generated by AI that misrepresents what actually happened. And I thought, oh, okay, so clearly there's a reason for that. Clearly people are using AI to generate content that doesn't necessarily reflect reality. So bearing that in mind, talk to us a little bit about, and you know, I'm prepping you here, so the smart way to use AI to actually generate content that's of value to your target audience, that has substance to it, and that, coming back to your earlier point, is different to everything else. Because I could type into AI and say, write me a book on podcasting, and it'll probably be the same as 100 other books on podcasting.
You're absolutely right. So the biggest issues when it comes to, because this process isn't flawed, you know, it's not perfect, right? So I'll list out some of the biggest issues. The most glaring one is AI's writing capacity and ability to write creatively for a prolonged period of time without you noticing, hey, that's AI. Like, we've all seen posts that were like, dude, this is AI. Like, you know, exploring, unleashed, you know, there's specific words and terminology that AI uses. That's the first thing. That's the first biggest problem, right? The second thing, of course, is writing jargon. So like not representing yourself, having it be very super generic, and it not being really, really authentic, right? It's not really like your message, like everything else out there in the market. I'd say those are the two biggest concerns, to be completely honest. If there's one that I'm missing, you can let me know. But the great thing that we've found to really, really help is, number one, we kind of like invite, if you're going to do this, what we do for our clients is we have an actual editor. You know, someone who's a professional editor, and we kind of used editor to make sure the writing is beautiful, to make sure it sounds really authentic, to make sure it's really high quality, right? That's almost like an additional layer. But even before that, what we're doing is we're turning the podcast transcripts, the words that the host the Creator has spoken in their own words, the value that they themselves have shared, what they themselves have believed, because in audio form, you can express yourself in when it's long form fully. Without any limitations. So we're able to feed all of that information to the AI to learn how the person talks, their beliefs, their principles, what they like, what they don't like, with our own knowledge and understanding as well, in combination with an actual editor, which I would highly recommend that you do. And don't cheap out on it. Actually really, really invest in this, because again, it's a book. It needs to be a high quality product. If not, it just won't work. So all this combination of things put together is how we're kind of almost like managing that. And then we have samples that we can pick from based on the writing style and what people like, what people don't like. And then based on that, with AI, it starts learning more and more. And our editor starts learning more and more. And then me and our clients start learning more and more. And it's this ongoing process. So it definitely requires some experimenting, you know, but it's doable once you have a process and a system in place for that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I weighed off.
I think you raised two really key points there. You did answer the question. The two really key points are that it does need the human involvement.
Yes.
Both at the front end and at the editing side. So to kind of produce the final product from what AI has. I think the strength of AI is pulling together lots of information that you give it and kind of organizing it. The other big point there is capturing the voice of the person. And I've found in some of the work I do with AI is I take the transcripts and I've got some prompts where I get it to analyze the voice of the people in the transcript, and I get it to actually analyze the voice of the individuals that I want to highlight. And I've got three steps that I do there. And the first one is just sort of a general analysis, analyze the tone and voice here, then analyze the voice and speaking style and the language patterns and the language tools or techniques that the guest, so it, sometimes I use it for interviews, that the guest uses in this. And then after I've got all that, then I say, okay, I want you to use those language patterns and those to give me a summary and a snapshot and a short article about this thing. And then I give them I give it the structure of the article that I want. And then I get something that's about 80 to 90% of where I want to go, and then I still work on it. But it's done kind of that 80 to 90% would have taken me perhaps a day, most of a day, to go through listening and making notes, listening again, making notes, listening again. That day is condensed into about 15 minutes or maybe even less than that, because I've got the prompts are all saved, they're all automated, it's all a custom GPT. So yeah, so that's what I'm doing, and I'm still experimenting with that. As you say, you've got to experiment with these things, because I think the power is there. It's not as easy as just throwing a question in and saying, oh, I've got a book now.
Honestly, I wish it were that easy. I'd be a very rich man. My clients would be extremely happy. My relatives in Nigeria would be, you know, raving and celebrating. But it does require a lot of work. You know, it doesn't make things much easier and faster. Absolutely, 100% it does. But again, it's not perfect. And anything like this that's new and you're experimenting with, and you're kind of trying to push what's possible in terms of the limits. Things are going to break, and they should break. You know, you shouldn't expect things to just go perfectly. Like, when has business ever gone perfectly? Problems happen.
I think with some of these tools, if you can't break them, or if you don't get to the point of breaking them, so I then go and reach out, particularly if it's in beta testing and I'm one of the beta testers. So if something breaks, I sort of reach out to the developers and or the founders and say, hey, I found something that's not working or doesn't. And that usually they're so grateful for people that have really stressed the system and highlighted to them some flaws. And that's gotten me a huge number of products where I've got lifetime use of them because I've basically contributed to the development of it through that mechanism. Yeah. So I like to break things.
Yeah, that's it. I like that philosophy.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fascinating, Anthony. I'm just sort of seeing the time tick away here. Time flies when you're having fun. We could go on talking ages about podcasting and taking the content from your podcast and turning it into books, or you can turn it into other content. Obviously, it's all there and the use of AI. But I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, our innovation round. That's the same five questions I ask of every guest. And the idea is you'll give us some short, sharp answers and inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
I like it. Let's do it.
Yeah. What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Fail more.
I love it. Yeah. And you've certainly had a lot of failures in your journey so far. What's your philosophy around that? Like, if you have a big failure, how do you kind of pick yourself up and how do you move forward from there?
Failure is just a piece of data that says something didn't work, try something else. Okay, why didn't this thing work? Is it because of A, I didn't do enough of it, or B, I just did it completely wrong? Which one is it? You identify which one it is, and then you try again. It's a feedback loop. You try something, you fail. You ask yourself the question, well, why didn't this work? You think of a hypothesis. Well, I believe if I did this next time, it should work. The next time, you change your behavior based on that failure to increase the likelihood you succeed the second time round. So when you go at it again, you have this new philosophy. You apply that, and if it works, that means your hypothesis that you made was correct. Failure is just data. It's just feedback. So you have to be stoic about it. And of course, yeah, there's different levels of failure, but you know, how I kind of view it again is just data. You have to just move on regardless. What are you going to do? Stop? You know, like.
Love it. Yeah, no. My business coach always says no such thing as failure. It's just feedback. Yeah, so it's exactly what you said. Yeah. All right. Well, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Reading lots of different types of books, consuming lots of different types of content, experiencing lots of different types of things. I think creativity is birthed from experiencing tons of different things. And I always find that everything in a strange way is connected. Everything. Life is interconnected in the most mysterious ways. Like, you know, not to go too deep into philosophy, like, dude, we're alive. We have consciousness, you know, or we create life. Like, everything's very bizarre. I could go on a massive tangent, but to reel it back in, right? Yeah. At the core of it, to really innovate and to push innovation is to experiment a lot and experience new things, because that will give you new ideas. It creates new neural pathways in your mind that you didn't think were possible. Some random thing you saw last week about, you know, some random thing you watched last week about anxiety will somehow help you with a client that you're working with randomly. Like, it just, things are very, very, very strange. So I think just experiencing more will really lead to just you thinking about different ideas and having that creative juices flowing.
Yeah. And having the curiosity to kind of look to connect the dots there. If something captures your attention, say, oh, wonder why that is. And
yeah. Part about it is, most of the time, you don't even have to do the thinking. It just, the dots just connect. Then you have the thought, you know?
Yeah. All right. Do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
You know, I'm going to give you the boring answer, ChatGPT. I've got to say, ChatGPT is bloody awesome. I love that thing. Yeah, ChatGPT.
Yeah. Well, I use it every day for all kinds of things. So this morning, a friend of mine's going to Japan, but he's doing a cruise out of Japan, And he said to me this morning, because I traveled a lot in my corporate day and I'd been to Japan a lot, and he said, oh, do you think for 2 days in Tokyo I'll need to purchase a SIM card, or can I get away with Wi-Fi? And I said to him, I think Tokyo has pretty extensive public Wi-Fi coverage, but I will. And he said, oh, maybe I should Google it. So I just brought up ChatGPT and it gave me a whole chapter and verse with a list of where the public Wi-Fi spots were and how you access them and everything. So it's saved a lot of time for Google searching.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Yeah, the ChatGPT is it's gold.
Mm. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
Negotiate and remind them of their why. You know, so when I say negotiate, okay, at the end of your call, you finish off with a client, you set some action plans, just ask them, okay, is there any reason why this you can't get this done by Monday? No, there's not. Are you sure? Yeah. Are you 100%? Yeah. Will I get it done by Monday? Yeah. Just by getting a client to affirm that it's possible, that there's no reason why they can't do it, and then almost like validate that to themselves three times, it keeps them accountable. You know, it'll make them do the work. Even if it's on a Monday morning, they'll get the work done before the time, because humans have a tendency to want to have, to keep consistent with their identity. So if I said to you, I'm going to do this, and I said that publicly, and I said that multiple times, there's almost an internal pressure built in to stay consistent with my word. So that's one thing that's been huge for us. It's just been like, you know, just like negotiate, like, you know, why can't you do this? What's stopping you, holding you back from doing this? And then reminding them when they lose track, like, hey, look, based on how you're doing and how you're moving, the pace you're moving at, the goal we set of 5,000 monthly downloads right now in, from your end, do you think that's realistic based on the pace you're moving at? No, it's not. Okay, cool. Well, got that. That makes sense. And why is that? Oh, because I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, and I'm not moving too far. Okay, cool. Well, I mean, what are we going to do to fix that? Oh, well, we can do this and that. Okay, yeah. And how about this? Would you think this would be good for you as well? Yeah, okay. Is there anything that we can do to support you to make it unreasonable for you not to fail? You can maybe, could we have a bit more, maybe a bit more check-ins? Yeah, cool. That has been extremely, 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 extremely valuable. Remind them of their why and then letting them know, like, just remind them, like, the pace you're currently moving at, will you get to that goal? Yes or no? Yes, yeah. Karen, as you are. No, what has to change?
Yeah. Yeah, and being supportive rather than just sort of calling them out on it. Yeah, I love it.
Absolutely.
All right, and we talked a little bit about differentiating. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be more of yourself. And I don't think you should be authentic. I think you should be more of yourself, which means almost overly authentic. exaggerate the weird parts of your past. Didn't come out right. Exaggerate the best parts and the unique parts of yourself, you know. I think people say, you know, I think being authentic really means staying extremely true to yourself, and being more of yourself means outwardly confidently embracing who you are fully and being, you know, being expressive of that. Don't try to hold things back, because at the end of the day, people are so drawn to authenticity because there's so little of it in the world. People like seeing people being free. There's something you respect about it. You don't have to like the person, but if they're being authentic, you can't help but respect them, because there's a very, there's a piece that a lot of people are missing. So be more of yourself. Don't just be yourself, be more of yourself. What are those weird things? Yeah. Exaggerate them.
Yeah? More of it. Okay, I love it. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for getting us through the buzz round. This has been fantastic, Anthony. Now, where can people find out more about you and the work you do, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared today?
Absolutely. So look, if you are a podcaster or a creator looking to start a podcast or has a podcast, check out Why Your Podcast Isn't Growing. I would recommend episode number 2, which is 7 reasons why most podcasts struggle to fail that no one is talking about. That's an incredible starting point that will help you gain clarity on why your show isn't growing. If you want to contact me about the book stuff and you want to explore potentially how you can start distilling your knowledge and wisdom you've shared on your podcast, YouTube, or any other piece of content into a book, reach out to Anthony at getmorelisteners.com. and let me know. And that's kind of those are the two things I'd say.
Excellent. All right. And as always, we'll have those in the show notes so people can click straight through. So finally, before we wrap up, Anthony, what action would you like our listeners to take from our conversation today?
I would like you to start experimenting more with ChatGPT, you know, just start in different ways. You know, I think that's going to be a huge thing in the future where it's like, the earlier you can form the habit of using ChatGPT, the more you unlock what's possible with ChatGPT. The more you unlock what's possible with ChatGPT, the more enjoyment you gain out of ChatGPT. And you can move at such a much faster pace when you've built that habit, because again, you're exposing yourself to new experiences and things you wouldn't think about. You've just explained right there, right? How your friend was going to Japan and had this question. People go to Google, but you went, no, ChatGPT, because again, you form that habit of understanding the use cases for ChatGPT. Mm. People don't know the use cases yet because I haven't experimented enough. So I would really encourage you, you know, I'd really, really encourage you to start experimenting more, because it really does start to unlock what you see, what you believe is possible with this technology. And it's pretty impressive.
Yep. All right. Well, there's a very clear call to action. And if people want to share with us the things they find, we would love that, because we'll probably learn from that as well.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Anthony, for being on the show and for our conversation today. I've really enjoyed this and had a lot of fun and got a lot of ideas out of this as well. And please do stay in touch. I think we'll probably have another show, another conversation in us for a future show.
Absolutely. I want to say thank you so much. I really appreciate this. Great questions. It was great having the insight. It's great geeking out about ChatGPT as well and just the technology and AI, because a lot of people say that, but they don't play around with it every single day. So it's always nice having a little geek out of you. So I appreciate you having me on. This has been awesome.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community, where you'll enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.